Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And now, before we get started with today's episode, I wanted to let you know that I'm here in the studio with a buddy of mine, Dan Murray Serta, host of Secret Leaders Podcast, a business show interviewing some of the world's biggest founders.
Hey there, listeners.
Dan, now tell us about the show in one sentence.
Well, Jamie, thanks for asking. Secret Leaders Podcast gets a microphone in front of the founders of some of the world's largest and most successful businesses. So think Shazam, ClassPass, Joe Malone, Planet Organic, Not on the High Street Calm, and even Deliveroo.
Now, I can personally recommend the show. It's incredible. So if you're looking for another business and entrepreneurial podcast, head over to your listening platform of your choice and search Secret Leaders. It's great.
Okay, so coming back to you all in your bathtub, we're ready for part two.
I love it how you think they're in a part and then in a bathtub.
Well, you know, I think you can kind of use your imagination.
I love that you're imagining our listener in the bathtub.
You make it sound creepy now. I'm not going to go to that weird kind of level, but okay, so we're back for part two with Ashley.
You know, the whole point of this podcast is for people to understand that you don't have to be a certain person. Yeah. You don't have to come from a certain background. Yeah. You don't have to have a certain education to make yourself a success. And when we talk about success, in our opinion, is that you wake up every day, you have a purpose, you're doing something you love, you're building something that you want to do, right? And the problem why a lot of people don't do that is because they fear.
Right.
They fear failing. They fear that they're going to lose money. They fear that they're not going to achieve what they want to achieve. How do you get past that fear bubble? How do you move through it?
I think, maybe some of the fear that can be, can be solved for. So maybe there's some pieces or aspects that you're like, gosh, I'm so scared about this, but I can probably solve them and it'll make it better. But otherwise, I think you've also got to just think, what is the worst thing that can happen, really? So you start something and then it doesn't go the way that you planned. That is not the worst thing that can happen. Get some perspective on really what people that don't have, what that looks like. And then it makes I think anybody that's got the ability to start their own business, it's a really privileged position to be in. So yeah, I think a lot of the time that fear is driven by ego.
It is true. I have a sort of weird and a sort of tangent on that. A friend of mine was in a relationship, didn't want to be in the relationship, and he was watching a documentary on the Normandy beaches.
Yeah.
And he was watching it happen and saw all these men dying and all these brave people. Yeah, and he said, well, if they can go and fight and go on the beaches and do these things, I can surely break this relationship up. And you have to, and that is a win, but you have to put things into perspective. You have to say, what is the worst that can happen? What is going to happen? If I fail, what? I fail and people go, congratulate you if you do fail, because at least you gave it a freaking go.
Yeah.
You know, the quote that I follow, that I always go by, to get something you never had, you have to do something you never did.
I love that quote.
You have to do it, right? You have to push boundaries.
Right.
You have to be prepared to fail, because if you aren't prepared to fail, you'll never succeed.
Right. 100%.
So you moved to London.
Yeah.
Why London? What was the draw to London?
I'd lived here before, so I had a bigger professional network here.
Yeah.
London's also, it's sort of closer to South Africa as well. It's the same time zone. So I feel like I can be close to my family.
Yeah. And you didn't want to go back to South Africa. That was kind of not an option.
Yeah, that wasn't really an option.
For what reason? Because it doesn't have the same
scale, I guess.
It doesn't have the same scale.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to launch Waldo in South Africa at some point, but I think we've got to reach much more scale and then sort of add that on, as opposed to that being a starting point.
And you said at the moment, we were just talking before we started recording, that you're now looking to go back to the States as well.
Yeah.
So you're just setting up in New York, which is super exciting. So you'll have the UK, the US. Is that from the UK, are you running Europe as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're a small, lean, busy team.
Yeah.
Is that what it says when you walk? Is that what it says when you get employed? By the way, you are now a small, lean,
busy
machine.
No, I think probably in the beginning it's just like, you know, so international, and then you realize, no, small, lean, busy.
Yeah.
But as you also mentioned, you know, you said you moved to London because you had sort of professional contacts.
Yeah.
How important are contacts and actually putting yourself out there, meeting different people, connecting with different people when you are starting a business?
Yeah, I think huge. Like really, really important.
In what ways?
So I think for that feedback thing, so, you know, trying to get as many people's opinions as possible, like creatives, finance people, other entrepreneurs, like just try and get as many opinions as you can from people whose opinions you value as well. So people that will give you honest feedback.
But also, isn't there the quote where, you know, too many cooks spoil the broth? Everyone has an opinion.
Yeah, that's true.
So how do you shuffle through the cards and find the joker when you're looking for the ace? Or, I mean...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because if you can ask everyone, right?
Yeah.
And what we have found with different podcasts and different... panels is that everyone wants to say what they think.
Yeah.
But in fact, normally your gut is, you know, again, Ed and I talk about this all the time, but when we started Candy Kittens, everyone said, well, you're starting a sweet company.
Right.
This is going to be ridiculous. And we said, well, we want to do it and we're going to make it gluten-free.
Yeah.
Probably someone said to you, what, you're going to make subscription
contact lenses?
Like, you're crazy.
And go up against Johnson & Johnson? Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. And you're going to make them cool and brand it this way and call it Waldo? Isn't, you know, how did you get past the noise?
Yeah. So I think listen to people's feedback when it comes from their area of expertise. You know, when people make these grand statements like, well, why on earth would you do sweets? I mean, that's like negating the entire business idea. Like, have an opinion on an aspect of it, but don't blow the whole thing out the water. And I think if somebody does that, then like maybe that's not great
advice. So you just take those opinions and put them to one side.
You just choose to listen to, I guess.
But you had these contacts in the professional world, and as you mentioned, finance. And finance is oxygen when it comes to starting business. You said your first year you spent £50,000. That was it only in your first year. And you moved to London. You studied finance, so you understood the model. Ish. Is that a little...
Ish. Yeah, like I understood I didn't really enjoy it, but I understood the... jargon. Like, so
what do you mean jargon?
So, you know, when it comes to fundraising, like I understood the terms. So like, what is valuation? What is a warrant? What is what is a term sheet? What is, like, what's the difference between pre-money and post-money? Like, there's all these sort of jargon words that I think people expect you to understand. But like, how on earth are you supposed to know that?
I think it's so true. And I think that lots of people listening to the podcast, this is exactly kind of some of the details that Jamie and I are interested in helping people with, really.
Right.
It's kind of getting past that. So you have this great idea, but you're just totally petrified when you kind of come up face to face with the finance world.
Yeah.
And what would be your best tips for kind of trying to break that down and start out in a fundraise or starting to raise any kind of finance?
I think there should actually be like an entrepreneur's glossary of like, these are some
like
of the words.
Like a Lonely Planet.
Right.
Exactly. The entrepreneurial world.
Exactly. So I think like just try and understand sort of the baseline, like some of the words.
Yeah.
And then I think also ask, you know, like if you're speaking to an investor and they're just throwing jargon at you, I think very seldom you want to be like, sorry, what does that mean? Because you don't want to come across like you don't know. But how are you supposed to know?
Yeah.
Like, you've never sat, or perhaps you've never sat on that other side of the table. So I think
I think it's so true because when we're having conversations with a supermarket now or a sweet manufacturer, we kind of catch ourselves talking in words that are just unique to the industry.
Yeah.
But actually, if someone says, sorry, what does that mean? I wouldn't think, well, that person's an idiot. I'd think, oh God, that's me actually being really silly, assuming that you'd know what that meant.
Exactly.
So I'm sure investors actually, in reality, think like that.
Yeah.
Because they don't really, they know you're not a finance person. That's why they're having the conversation with you.
But some people have an ego and they like to sort of catch you out and say things and they sort of go, well, you don't know what that is. Do you know what? I'm going to be totally, I still didn't understand the difference. I remember about 3 years ago, I didn't understand the difference between gross and net. I still didn't understand the difference between those two. And I kept going, they went, what's your gross? And in my head, I was going, does that mean Net.
I'll just give you gross and net.
But it's true. Again, it goes back to that point that you said at the beginning, well, you know, where you kind of have to fake it till you make it. You kind of have to work your way through. I also kind of want to ask, because you were doing this by yourself. You were trying to raise money, and I assume you were raising money through your contacts, not so much through family, but through other people. Yeah. As a female, we've spoken to people on the podcast who have gone through a similar thing, and they actually struggled because, firstly, they went into different rooms with different angels, different investors, and because you were a female, they didn't invest. The fact that you didn't have a co-founder, they didn't want to invest. Was that... Did you have the same experience?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's hard because I wish that I could have had the same experience as a man and then really like A/B test the two, but I've only had the experience as a woman. So I think when I listen to what fundraising is like for guys, or when I see, you know, what other male entrepreneurs are able to raise with very, very similar businesses, that's quite stark. But I don't necessarily know what it comes down to. I don't know if it is because I'm female. Like, I don't know if that is actually a trigger or if it's because women maybe sell differently to men. You know, maybe guys are a lot bolder and women are a lot...
I think it's a really rational way of thinking about it, because actually lots of people say, oh, it's been so tough for me because of this particular circumstance. But actually there's so many different variables. How good you are at pitching, how great your brand looks, how great the idea is, what the commercial opportunity looks like. There's so many different things that it's impossible, like you say, to A/B test. So how do we actually know? But obviously there are barriers for everybody. Yeah. And I guess that's something that you seem to have overcome quite successfully. And now you're well funded, and you're still, I think, working through a fundraise at the moment as well.
Yeah. So we're looking at fundraising at the moment. Our last round, we sort of did half US, half UK capital, because I knew that I wanted to launch in the US.
Yeah.
And now we'll probably take most of our capital from the US.
But, you know, because I want to focus on this idea of sort of raising money. When you get those setbacks, because you've probably been into rooms, situations where someone has said, actually, you know what, it's not for me.
Yeah.
Does that put you back? Do you go, oh God, perhaps my idea isn't good, or perhaps my idea isn't going to work? And that will happen to a lot of people, where they're going further and further and further down the line.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to actually a podcast about the writer of Fleabag. You know, huge success, Killing Eve, which she did the same one, huge success. She was knocked back the entire time, knocked back by every single person. She almost thought it had gone away, but she kept that fire within her. Did you always have that fire within you that you wanted to push forward? You knew that even though you had these knockbacks in terms of the financial gain, it was going to work.
I did. But then I think, you know, some investors, it depends on what their reason is. And I really always try and ask for feedback. And I know that that's quite hard for investors to give. So they'll be like, you know, we just don't think you can create a brand in this space, or like whatever it is. And I'm like, but why?
Yeah.
Why don't you think I can create a brand in this space? And then you get an understanding of like, well, how meaningful is that comment, or are they like fobbing you off? Because if they say, no, I don't think you can create a brand in this space because, you know, of the distribution channels, and, you know, if they go into like a really well thought out answer, then that's valuable. But if that's where it ends, you just don't think I can create a brand in the space, then, well, maybe you need to think about that.
Have you questioned before? So have you said why?
Yeah.
You've done that.
I said why. And then, you know, then I've had the answer, well, I don't know if you can create a product. I don't think you can create a brand with a product that you can't see. And I've said, well, I mean, that's the whole skincare industry, right? Like, isn't that beauty industry as well? Like, you don't know what brand is on
my
skin. Loads of cosmetics. Like,
Are you now then, I mean, you seem to be asking questions of the investors as well. Is that something you're looking for, a particular type of investor, not just the money?
Yeah. And that's something I didn't do in the early days. I think, like, that's really important. Entrepreneurs don't ask, I think, enough questions.
God, nothing. Absolutely not. You're too scared.
You're so grateful for that cash, and you need that cash so quickly.
Yeah.
So what are you looking for now? What's the perfect investor look like for you?
I think an investor that is easy to have a conversation with. So a low ego, helpful investor that you know, we'll sit around the table and like help you work through ideas instead of shooting from the hip.
Rather than someone who wants to sit there and take control and go, no, we should do it this way.
Right.
You know, and I hate using this word, but having a bully around the table is one of the worst.
Killer.
It's killer for your brand.
Yeah.
You need an investor who believes. And you know, when you're looking for an investor, yes, they're putting their money in. Yes, they like the brand. But actually, in fact, they're investing in you. And that's what you need to have. Someone who is investing as you in a person, whatever road you're going down, they need to support that.
Right.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And actually, I want to get to that point of your launch of Waldo.
Yeah.
So what year is this? We're in 2017 now?
Yeah, 1st of August.
1st of August, 2017. Okay, you're there, you're ready to go, you've done all your research, you've got the branding, you've got the supplier sorted. It's a subscription model. No one knows who you are.
Yeah.
You didn't have the advantage of what I had where I was on a television show and marketing was like that. You didn't... There was nothing out there about it. How did you press enter on a computer and go, right, here we go? How did you build up to that launch?
So we'd done a little bit of PR that coincided with the launch, which was helpful.
Expensive?
Yeah. Well, it was through an agency. I'd probably do it a little bit differently now. But it was actually, we sort of set the website live and then I was like, okay, well, this is launch day. We put out some ads at the same time.
But where are you, sorry to focus on that marketing, where are you, because you've studied this, okay, there's nothing really like it, you're launching a new product, it's subscription based, where do you put the PR?
Right.
How do you know that, where do you put it, where do you go?
Yeah, so, I mean, I used an agency for that, and we try to use, like, because all of our sales were online, we try to use, like, only on online publications, so I think our first article was with Business Insider, which gets like a lot of reach. And then we were working with a small marketing agency that helped us put like our first set of ads live. But it was a little bit like, okay, well, we don't know how this is going to go. So there's kind of that moment where you're like sitting there, you're like, well, I've done everything I can. Like, let's see.
Here we go.
Here we go.
How exciting is that moment as
And how did it go? So you guys...
That first customer order comes through, it's wild.
Yeah, amazing.
It's like, yes, who is this person? Where do they live?
I'm going to bring it to your house.
Right, exactly.
Because you launched and you got, if I'm right, you got 10,000 subscribers. Yeah. Which that's just, pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. So, and then we ran out of stock. So it is like that. It's like, okay, wait, and then things break, right? So then you're like just trying to fix things. I remember our checkout broke on like day 4.
So what do you do? You're basically
you're just like
jumping through hurdles every single time.
Exactly, like phoning the developer at like 1 a.m. You're just like, it's broken, fix it.
But does that ever stop?
No.
There we go. It never does, right?
Yeah.
And everyone thinks that you look at all these juggernauts, you look at all these different things, you look at all of our businesses, and they think, well, that's running smoothly. It's not.
Right.
Every day is another problem.
Yeah.
So you're launching, you're ready to go. You know, you said that you ran out of stock.
Yeah.
You know, you're a subscription based business. That's what they're paying for, and you run out of stock. Your most important thing.
Yeah.
Was it because the growth was too quick?
Yeah. So the growth was too quick.
And that can kill a business.
Yeah. Exactly. But luckily, we'd been planning for the launch of Waldo Vitamin, which is our second product. So the saline solution is infused with vitamin B and E. It's a more premium like product. And luckily the launch of that, or the arrival of that stock, coincided with the out of stock of Original. So we just upgraded everybody to Waldo Vitamin as like part of the launch of Vitamin.
Okay.
Which was like our saving.
Yeah,
grace.
Amazing. And but, I don't know if you can say, but how many subscribers are you up to now?
So in total, we're at like 80,000.
Wow.
That's so exciting.
Incredible.
That's amazing. But also, how do you, okay, because okay, everyone starts a business, right? And especially a subscription-based model.
Yeah.
The more subscribers, the more revenue, the bigger your company grows.
Yeah.
But as I said before, growth can kill a company, yeah, right? And everyone, no one realizes that. When they start a business, they go, oh my God, we want to sell as many as we can. Yeah. Here we go, sell, sell, sell.
Yeah.
But in fact, it will destroy.
Right.
How, did you realize that before, or did you suddenly realize that as you were going? How did you,
yeah,
you know, overcoming that point of going, how do you have to make a decision sometimes to stop growing so quickly so, yeah, you can handle the business?
Yeah. So I think there's sort of like the growth road, and then there's like the process building road. And I think you can't like just run down the one without like having people on. So we try and do both in parallel. So as we were growing, we were also building our tech, also making sure that we're working with the right fulfillment center that could, you know, deal with our numbers, and trying to automate that as much as possible. So like 2 months in, we changed warehouses because it wasn't automated. So yeah, there's like a lot of process building in parallel.
But also, again, that goes a point about not fearing, you know, changing.
Yeah.
When something isn't right, change it.
Yeah.
And people,
absolutely,
don't want to change. They go, oh no, we've got to stick with this because even though it's not working quite as well, we can't possibly change.
Yeah.
Are you willing to change everything,
yeah,
to make it work?
Yeah.
You are. So you have no fear. If it's something, like I listened, you know, about the guy who set up the Apple shops.
Yeah.
And he bought Steve Jobs in the day before opening and said, I don't think it's right. And he the day before stopped it. He says,
yeah,
you should never go into something unless you are fully committed and you know it. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Like, obviously, it depends on the scenario, but for the most part, I do. Like, and then you just have to, like, we really now, like, follow what the numbers say, which sounds so cliche, but, like, we really do follow the customer data at a very granular level. So even when things, you know, even if it goes against, like, somebody's opinion on how it should be, like, if that's what the customer data says, and if then we test it. And we change it.
And how do you stay ahead of the game? Because you've got the big companies,
yeah,
chasing your tail,
yeah,
realizing that you're
such bullies.
Yeah, of course they are. They're such bullies. And they're chasing your tail and they're seeing that your model is working. How do you not worry about them and how do you stay ahead of them?
So we stay ahead of them by iterating as quickly as possible and making the product better. So, like, now pretty much all of Waldo is on our own platform, so we can change customer like tweaks sort of very quickly, which has been great. And then like with the competitors, I think like I try not to focus too much on them. Like, we obviously keep up to date with what they're doing, but yeah, I think if I spent a lot of time thinking about that, I would just be like so riddled with, I just like stand still with fear.
Do you sometimes look at yourself and sometimes you sort of think, how have I done this? How do you wake up and go, God, this is a bit scary. This is a bit odd. Yeah, you do, right? Do you wake up every day and go, shit, it's another day that I got to get things right?
Sometimes, yeah.
That sounds like very rare.
No, you do. Like, especially when it comes to the people, you know, like, I think we're like a team of 17 now, and then it's like, shit, there's all these people, you know?
Yeah.
That, so there is that, yeah.
I know for me personally, the building the team and kind of now we're about 20 people at Candy Kittens, and that for me is the hardest part and probably has been, because Jamie and I set out to launch this business because we had an idea and we thought, mm-hmm, it was cool and we were passionate about creating this brand, not because we wanted to manage 20
right.
people. And
yeah, people forget about that.
That's part. Tough, really, really tough. And all of a sudden now you've got all this responsibility and all these people and livelihoods to kind of
right.
to think about. What's been the number one kind of big challenge that you faced, the hardest thing for you since starting the business?
I think that people component is hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think if you hire, again, cliche, like if you hire the right people, things will be fine. But, like, genuinely, I've just tried to hire people. Right. Try to hire people that are, like, good people, like good, kind people that want to build this with me, that, you know, don't feel entitled, that don't, people with grit, people that'll get their hands dirty.
Do you know what's so great to hear from you, Ashley, is that you're open and honest about how tough everything is and how hard it is and how it's not easy. And it frustrates me when you speak to individuals who aren't self-aware enough to kind of go, they just go, yeah, it's great, we're doing this, right. We're doing that. And that frustrates me because it is hard. And it doesn't matter how big or how small you are, the problems are just as big or just as small.
Right.
And it's very refreshing to see, even when you talk about hiring people, you go, God, yeah, it's hard. How do you pick the right person? Yeah. How do you know what they're like? You're sitting in a room with someone for half an hour to an hour.
Right.
You know, how do you know that? And it's very refreshing to see. For you also, what advice would you give to someone who is setting up a subscription model?
I think if you run a subscription business, you have to be very data oriented. Like, there's so many levers to pull around, customer behavior, cancellations, how do you reduce churn? And you just have to understand that. Like,
what do you mean by churn?
So, how many people are signing up and then where do they drop off? What causes them to drop off? You know, is it a certain email you're sending? Is it
There's so many nooks and crannies.
There's so many nooks and crannies when it comes to subscription. And you're trying to build a long-term relationship with the customer. So, I think subscription businesses are more complicated than one-off sale businesses.
And will it always be pure subscription?
I'm not sure. We might test one-off. We tested it early on when we launched and it didn't really work.
But there's lots of interesting examples of Harry's
exactly.
Grays and others that have gone into retail. Is that something that maybe on the horizon for you
guys? I think so. We'll definitely look at it. I mean, 70% of contact lenses are still bought offline. So you have to go, I guess, where your customers are.
But it's also exciting to see that the growth there, the potential growth there is.
Right.
And that's what's exciting, that you've probably only, what percent of the market have you?
Point,
right? Which is so exciting. Another question, last question from me. What would you have changed if you could go back and change anything or nothing?
I might have raised a bit more early on.
Same here. It's always a thing. I said everything, money is oxygen.
Yeah.
And you think you need £2, you need £10. And
right.
It's because everything goes so much quicker and you make the mistakes and you have to change
right.
factories or suppliers. To do. And that, everything costs money.
Yeah.
Because everyone is an individual and everyone needs to be paid. I totally agree
so
with you.
So giving ourselves a little more headroom would have been nice.
Absolutely. And Ashley, thank you so, so much. It's been super, super interesting hearing the story and listening to everything. We finish every single episode by asking guests the same question.
Mm-hmm.
And the question we wanted to ask you is, if you were to start a completely new business tomorrow, forget Waldo ever happened, start something completely new, what would it be?
Oh, that's such a good question. It would probably be not too far away from what Waldo, the space that we're in, but consumer healthcare, but more for the consumer. So a modern Johnson & Johnson that's much more customer-friendly, environmentally friendly, plugged into the world. Probably that.
Okay, something more relevant and exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Or candles.
Candles, just candles.
Hey, Ashley Hine, thank you so much. Well done.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah,
we could have reached more. And once again, we apologize that we messed up to begin with.
No, thanks. It was really fun.
Thank you so much. The variation of people we get on Move is astounding. You know, we get people who leave university at 19 years old and go and start a business, or we have people who do the complete opposite, like Ashley. Ashley worked in loads of different schools, getting loads of different degrees because she thought that the knowledge would help her through, and it totally did. Her thesis was on subscription-based models, and that's what she then went into.
This girl is super smart and definitely used education to get herself where she is today. I think that there's so much we can learn from Ashley. She's going out there and challenging a pretty scary industry. I think anything that is that close to the medical world comes with restrictions, rules, regulations, things that perhaps could to put most people off. But Ashley has smashed down those barriers and clearly succeeding along the way.
Totally. Ashley, thank you so much for being on Move today. Thank you so much for listening. Honestly, it really does mean a huge amount. And we also hope today's podcast has inspired you to move towards your dream or passion. Now, if you like the podcast, please subscribe and leave us a comment. And if you'd like to get in touch, please email us at move@moveclub.co.uk or follow us on Instagram at moveclub. Until next time, this is Move.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.